prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. So Judy, we're ready to hear what you have to say on that.
Okay, Judy, you'll have to unmute yourself.
That would help, wouldn't it?
It would. All right, I'm going to turn you around, so those who go.
Flip me over.
Oh, baby.
Oh, what a sicko. We're a group of people who normally would not mix, I'll tell you. I could never see me spending 5 minutes with the likes of Kevin. And now I can't get enough of him. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. Good evening, everyone. My name is Judy. I am an alcoholic. I want to remind everybody that God is still writing your story. Leave the pen down. You don't have to add anything to the story. God will do it for you. Boy, I was thinking about this step today and how important it is in my life and how important it's been for a very long time as I became sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and how everything has changed over time. From my earlier sobriety to the middle sobriety and now to my older years in sobriety. And if you were here when I was talking about steps 1, 2, and 3, then I think you might remember that I didn't want to hear anything about God, and anything that reeked of religion or religious prayers and the like, it just really turned me off. And still to this day, I've said this a couple of times, but just so if there's anyone out there that feels the same way I do, you know, you're not unique. I don't like the third and the seventh step prayer. I don't like prayers that are already written for you. It reminds me of, this is how you have to think and pray, and it isn't what I was taught when I got here. I was taught that we can think and pray any way that we want to, that God made us, He gave us a brain, and we can use it. And the important thing was that we begin to try and use it for good instead of for the craziness, like when we were out there drinking. Hi, what's the matter? Am I crooked?
No, somebody wanted to come in.
Oh, got it. Okay, good. So, so in the beginning, step 11, well, I didn't get to step 11. Let's start there. I really didn't get to step 11 or actually learn about it for application specifically into my life until I was about between 4 and 5 years of sobriety. That's how long it took me to get to step 11. I was a sick person when I got here. I struggled with emotional distress and immaturity, with a spiritual sickness that I can't even hardly define. There was a hole in my being that I just thought could never be filled. I had an idea that there was something working for the benefit of people, but I didn't see that working for myself. I thought if there was a God and if He found me, it was all over. He would kill me on the spot because I was so filled with shame, remorse, and I just felt like a piece of crap. Thank goodness that people in Alcoholics Anonymous were kind enough to help me turn that all around and to helped me realize that God just doesn't make any junk, and that I wasn't a piece of junk, and that I could contribute, and they showed me how I could begin doing that. And I began to have some feeling of self-worth and contentment and a real feeling of belonging. And your religious kind of overtures that I heard in the meetings started making sense to me. And that was a big revelation for me. To go from being closed-minded to having my mind begin to open a little bit, that was really something. Because honestly, I really thought that would never happen. When I was about, it was about my fourth or fifth year of sobriety, my beloved Mary, my sponsor, took me to the International Women's Conference in Atlanta, Georgia. And they had a workshop at that conference on, I think it was on Friday, and it was on meditation. And Mary had been, we had been working on steps, and we were getting, I don't know if we had actually begun step 11 or exactly where we were, but it was close. And she thought it'd be a good idea if we went to that workshop. And I thought, oh, Jesus, here we go. And I was a wreck. It was my first big conference like that. My goodness, I think there were 2,000 women. I had never been to a big conference like that with women. And boy, they were all dressed to the nines, and I felt completely and totally out of place. Only because that was what was in my mind. I wasn't out of place. They embraced me. They loved me. They were kind. They were considerate. And pretty soon I began to feel a little comfortable. So we went to this workshop, and there was a meditation guide. And I have to tell you, that workshop was life-changing for me because I didn't know how to meditate. Mary told me I could start with 30 seconds. And she said, I just want you to sit and be quiet for 30 seconds and just try to quiet your mind. Well, she didn't say just try to quiet your mind. She said, and the idea is to quiet your mind. But she said, just let whatever thoughts come through, just let them come through your mind. Well, the thoughts that came through my mind were like horror, terror, old tapes, old trauma. Oh my God, it was, I didn't want to spend a lot of time there. So I thought, meditation is not going to be something I'm going to be spending a lot of time on. They are wrong. This book needs to be changed, as I thought so many times with so many things, but always I was wrong. It's funny what you come to understand you don't know when you think you know it all, huh? Oh, boy. I'm so glad today I can say, I have no idea. I don't know. This is how I see it. This is how I experienced it. But I really don't know. So anyway, the guided meditation just took me to a place of complete and total peace. I hadn't felt that way ever, not one time in my life. And there were no crazy thoughts floating through my head. This guide was just really good. There probably was 200 women in this workshop, so the room was really full. I remember there were people sitting on the floor because all the seats were taken. And we just got comfortable in our chair. Mary was next to me. I felt safe. And I remember at the end of the meditation, tears. I was crying, and I didn't remember that even that emotion even started. And I was crying because I was still, and it was peaceful, and there wasn't any of the terror. There was none of the old stuff racing through my head. And I wasn't exactly sure how I got to that place, except that I did. And it changed my mind completely about meditation. And although I didn't, during the meditation, ask for any specific instructions, the instruction that I got during the meditation was that it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. And I don't know where that came from. At the time, I don't know where that came from. But I knew it wasn't me saying it, for heaven's sakes. It was really great. So for those of you who don't know how to meditate, who haven't tried it, I don't know about your area, but, I do know about your area. I think, isn't it on Thursdays you used to have a meditation meeting in the church right there on, I think it was on 20. I'm pretty sure I went there with Kathy D a couple of times, and it's just you open the meeting and you ring a bell and you have a certain amount of time to meditate. I think it's a lunchtime meeting, and it's a great meeting. Although that meeting is not a guided meditation meeting, I would recommend you trying to find instruction with a guided meditation meeting. I realize now, although I don't use it, a lot of the girls I sponsor do. They have a guided meditation on the internet, so you could try that. About 20 years ago, my younger sister got breast cancer, and she was already in trouble with a really difficult heart condition, and she had carotids that were closing on her, and she was just in really bad shape. So I spent a lot of time with her and went back and forth to her home and helped her with some things. And actually, when she started losing her hair, I shaved my head, and the thought about that came to me during meditation. I was asking how I might be able to help my sister, what I could do to make her hardship a little lighter. And she was so upset and so concerned about losing her hair that the thought came to me, why don't you shave your head with her? Take your beautician out to her home and have a shaving your head party. Because she had told me she's going to have to shave her head because, you know, she was losing big blotches of hair. So I called her and I presented this idea, and she just about flipped. She couldn't believe that I would do this. And so we got all the grandchildren together, and I took my beautician out there, and we had a shave your head party, and she had it on Facebook, and oh my goodness. And I'll tell you what, a bald head, in the wintertime, Jack, I'll tell you, you know, your head gets so cold. I had to wear nice, warm winter hats. And then we went out and we did wig shopping. And we just took and turned that whole thing completely around and made it into something so fun. Now, I promise you, on my own, I never would have done that. I have what I think is a big nose and big ears, and I don't look good with a bald head. And for the love of God, I would never shave my head. But I had no problem in doing so. And I thought I looked pretty cute. And you know, I was blessed to be able to do that. And that was clearly a result of meditation and asking, how could I help my sister through this really difficult time? Ooh, I'm going to cry because she just had surgery yesterday. She's been through a lot. And I have another younger sister who's in a nursing home. Oh my gosh, that girl, she had a stroke. Right after my mom passed and right before my late husband passed, It was like Mom died, Wendy had her stroke, and then Jim died. It was bad, bad year, all within 6 months or 7 months. And as a result of that stroke, Wendy ended up in a nursing home. And I was there to see Wendy on Tuesday this week, the first time in about 6 months, because her facility was closed for visiting, and I didn't want to go and visit without having my vaccine for the COVID. And so it's always a wonderful time to spend time with her. It's hard to have a conversation with her because her understanding and her language can be difficult for her. And I'm always asking, you know, what might I be able to do that might help her? And there's a lot of little things that I do. And of course, when I couldn't visit, I got my sisters, we gathered, and I said, you know, we can all send cards every other day, and then she'll just be bombarded with cards, and she'll have a feeling of love and caring, and we did that, and we got the whole family together, and we had a big trail of cars, and went to the nursing home and invited all the nurses and the rest of the residents to look out the window, and we had a dance party and music blasting last summer, and her daughter from the Carolinas came. And these are the results of asking what might I be able to do or help with or participate in bringing some joy or help or levity to another's life, a life maybe that isn't filled with the blessings that I have. So those are the two important things. With my children, I think the biggest result of meditation was giving up trying to control their life. The answers and the directions that I got during meditation for my children had been just support them. They know how to make their own decisions. Just support their decisions. And so I began, when they would call me and say, what do you think about this? What do you think I should do? My pat answer, and it still is today, I'm sure whatever you decide will be best for you, because you are so creative. You're a problem solver. You can figure this out, and you have a good conscience, and I trust that. And whatever you decide, I'll support you. And they're like, that isn't the answer I wanted to hear. Well, I know, but that's the answer you're going to get. Because it's not my job to tell you how to live your life. That's your job, and I'm just here to support whatever you decide. And it has been really quite a trip with my kids, because their friends are like, would your mother please adopt me? I mean, that's pretty nice coming from where I came from. From being somebody who left them alone in a new apartment and didn't come home until the next morning. And that's a direct result of 10 steps and then asking in an 11-step meditation request, what could I do that might be beneficial for my children? How could I be a better parent? Lots of things like that. But I got away from it. What I wanted to tell you was the Cleveland Clinic and their cancer center has CDs that are guided meditation. And my sister would use those to help with the pain and the fear of chemo and just the fear. And I would go with her. I was like her, just her support person when she would go to her treatments and so on. And we listened to this one guided meditation together. And I'm telling you, it was so wonderful. And if you, at the time, and this was about 20 years ago, if you just replace the cancer with alcoholism, it was very specific to what was troubling and going on with me. The emotions, the fear, the indecision, the what do we I hate getting old because, you know, you have a word and all of a sudden it jumps out of your head and it goes somewhere, but it doesn't come in your sight. And then about 2 hours later, here it comes whizzing through. It's crazy. But some of you can relate. Probably Kevin, too. So I would listen to that CD over and over and over again, and that specifically helped me. I hope that you don't have to have the experience of having a sister with cancer, and that you learn better meditation techniques because of that. But that's my story. That's what happened to me. And so Julie and I, that's my sister with the cancer, we have a kind of a soul folk connection because of that. With each of my sisters, I feel I have a deep soulful connection with them, each in a different way. And of course, my youngest sister and I both belong to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to tell you a story about my youngest sister. So once I got sober, I was 12 years sober, and I could see that her life was devastating. It was going down the tubes fast. She was married. She had, I think she had just had the one child then. She has two daughters. And I was, you know, fearful what was going to happen to her as a result of her drinking, and, you know, they were messing around with drugs, and I didn't, you know, she didn't tell me the truth about what she was doing, but, you know, I heard stories, and I was really alarmed at the future of her life, and, of course, her child as well. And in meditation, I asked what I might be able to do to help this sweet sister of mine, and the good Lord says she has to be ready. There's nothing you can do except to pray for her. And, of course, we hear that at meetings, and I had been to some Al-Anon meetings on and off throughout my early sobriety, and that's what I heard as well. And so it was kind of like almost the answer that I got for my children, you know. I can't make decisions for you. I can't tell you how to live, but I support whatever you decide. So I kind of had to step back and be in the shadows in her life, but still had a big fear. So at 12 years of sobriety, sharing in sobriety women's meeting in Willoughby asked me to speak at the anniversary meeting. And this was the first time in my sobriety I was going to be a speaker for an anniversary. So for me, it was a big deal. And I got a new dress, and Jim got me a corsage. And it was, I was really excited and honored. And they had a meal before and an anniversary event. And a couple minutes before the meeting was going to start, in walked my youngest sister, Darcy. I lived in Ashtabula, and this meeting was in Willoughby. It was close to where she lived in Wycliffe. And she had no idea that I was going to be there. And I had no idea, of course, that she was going to be there. She had called central office earlier that day and found out where a women's meeting was near her. This was her very first AA meeting. So in she came, and she was all disheveled and looking a little rough, and she saw me, and she, you know, she knew I was a member of AA, and I'm all dressed up, and she, you know, was wondering what was going on. And I introduced her to all the ladies that I knew and made sure that, you know, she was welcomed, and the meeting started, and my sister's been sober ever since. Prayer and meditation, huh? Prayer and meditation. Please help me. I have challenges. I don't know what to do. And I have people that I care tremendously about, and I need to know how can I better serve them? How can I be how can I create any kind of benefit for them? Is there anything I need to do to say? I think the willingness to make amends to my mom in the way that I did came directly through meditation. It's what I do every morning. I think about the day ahead. We may face indecision, as our big book tells us. If we sit quietly for a while, the answers will come. They always do. And when the answer doesn't come, guess what? It's not supposed to come from this channel. It'll come from another channel. Then I have to be open and I have to listen. And when I'm having conversation with other members in AA, I'll find the answer or the solution through a conversation with them, or a speaker at a meeting, or a CD that I pull out and play. And this the crazy part about it is, it'll just be a whim. It won't be like a thought. It'll just be, oh, I better play this. And I play it, and darn it, if that speaker didn't have the exact thing that I was struggling with, and there's my answer, so simple. It just amazes me how that happens. Of course, the phone calls, that happens all the time. I have to say that God is not anonymous in my life. This power, this universal truth, reveals itself daily in my life. Daily. I'm never without it. It's always some genuine knowing. I don't know how to explain it, you know? I guess if I could explain God, I would be God. So I don't know how to explain it. I want to tell you something else about my prayer and meditation. Mary always told me, you know, I can pray in any manner that I want to. And I used to think that if I had a problem with God and what he's doing, or some crazy thing that happens here on earth, or why did this happen, or, you know, how could that be God's will? She said I could ask him a question and, you know, really put him on the carpet, say, you know, I need you to explain this. Of course, I don't get answers to that necessarily. So I've been known to say, and I say it often, is that when I die, I have to interview God. I like to write. I love English. And what better candidate would I have than to interview God? I think that would be kind of fun. I think I don't like the shape of pears. I don't know why they're shaped that way. Where did he come up with that idea? And, just different things. I don't get it. There's a lot of things in life that don't make sense to me. And I just wonder, if there's a God, what in the hell was he thinking of? How did this come about? I hear it said in Alcoholics Anonymous that everything that happens is God's will. Well, I beg to differ with you. I think everything that happens is within the scope of human will. And it's how we decide and how we act and how we respond to things that causes certain events and experiences. And that God is sort of like, I can't tell you what to do. You're creative and you have the answers, but I'll support whatever you decide. I think that's kind of the God that I understand, at least. So that when people are struggling with the loss of someone, why did this happen? Well, it's God's will. It's God's will. I think that's a cruel thing to say. I don't know that it's God's will, and I would hate to think that God would cause, you know, on purpose, a lot of sorrow for a lot of people. I don't know. That's just my take on it. So I want to share with you, I want to read this. I was looking through my notes. You know, I keep notes when I go to meetings and write down things that resonate or bring me to a better understanding or give me another piece of information that I can maybe apply in my life or in working with the girls. And I came across this one and I thought it was appropriate for tonight. And it says, love is seeing God in the person next to us, and meditation is seeing God within us. Now, you know, in our big book, it tells us we don't have to be searching around for God, that deep down inside, every person is the fundamental belief in God. And that's what this saying means to me. And that's what comes to me in the knowing and meditation, that God lives in each of us, resides in each of us, in the form of, you could say, a soul, a conscience, a universal truth, because in meditation, that's where the thought resonates with me. It doesn't like come here and in my brain and all of a sudden there. It's more heartful, if you follow that. So that has been my experience with meditation. I do it often. I can't say that I meditate daily because I don't, but most days I do. I have a little enclosed front porch, and a couple of years ago I redid it, and I have a beautiful little settee out there and some pretty things that just put me in a space that's very comforting, and that's where I meditate. And sometimes the girls will come over and we'll be out there together. So that's what I do. I want to read to you the promises of the 11th step. It can be found on the bottom of page 87. This is the result of practicing the steps and applying specifically step 11 to your life. It says, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful. We ask for the right thought or action. Now, that's something I normally would not do. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, saying to ourselves many times through the day, thy will be done. We become much less in danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. You see, if we take the time to step back and ask for help, we become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily. We're not exhausted. We feel refreshed, for we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. So these are really good benefits of this step. You've all seen the caricature or the cartoon of the dog chasing its tail, or the mouse on the wheel. And basically that was my life prior to coming here to Alcoholics Anonymous, and never getting anywhere and never having any beneficial result. So I hope my experiences and the situations I shared with you today will help you in your moving forward in meditation and trying to develop a better way of life for yourself and a more dependence on a power greater than yourself. And the last thing I want to add that I didn't say is I have this old kitchen table with a metal top, and it has a pull-out piece that makes it a bigger table if needed. And I can't count the number of women and myself that have sat at that table and shared experiences. And I have to tell you, when I meditation is not just for me in the morning. There's many times that I use it. And when I'm working with another, I rely on it. I must. And my prayer always is, before they get to the door, let me be of service to them in some way that's going to benefit whatever challenge they have. And I will be sitting there talking to this young lady, and she'll share a challenge or an event or an experience that she's struggling with. And from, so it seems, out of nowhere, it just comes to my heart and my brain on what to say. And I can never... It always throws me for a loop. It's almost like I still can't believe this continues to happen time and time again. And it is not a thoughtful process of my own that I'm trying to think of a solution. The solution, the answer just comes. And on occasion, when it doesn't, I tell the young lady, I haven't got a solution for you today, but I promise you this. There is a solution, and it is on the way. You're going to have to pay attention, have an open mind, and you'll have to listen for it in some other vehicle, because it's not coming to me. And they have come to rely on that. They depend on that, and they know. And they'll say to myself, I'll hear them talking or sharing from the podium, and they'll say, and my sponsor always says, there is a solution. It may not be here today, but it's on the way. And sure enough, the solution always does come. You just have to wait sometimes. So that's what I got for you guys, and I want to thank you for having me. And I hope that the rest of your evening is joyful and peaceful, and that you have an opportunity to make some good memories. God bless you.
Thank you, Judy. So now we have time for some questions and answers. So anybody here in the room, if you have a question for our speaker, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll bring the microphone over for you. If you're on Zoom and you have a question, just go ahead and unmute yourself and speak when you're ready. So who would like to get us started? Okay.
Hi, Judy. I'm Leslie, alcoholic, and I wanted to say thank you so much. I really enjoyed listening to your conversation about the 11th step and how practical and how just day-to-day, real world it is. And thank you especially, too, for the part about the children thing. I mean, the conclusion hit me that my daughter is entitled to make her own mistakes, just like I did. And that thought popped into my brain, you know, kind of as you described. So I think I understand what you're saying. I really don't have a question except maybe this. I have taken some comfort periodically through the book As Bill Sees It, and Bill talks about his walking meditation, where he walks and times his breathing to his steps. And it's in page 90-something in As Bill Sees It. I was wondering if that's something you've made use of, or it's something that you share along with the ladies you sponsor.
I'm not sure that I heard that question clearly. That you share meditation walking, is that what you said?
Yes, there is a page in the book As Bill Sees It, where Bill talks about how when he would feel depressed, he would meditate by walking and by timing his breathing to his steps. And that would bring him some peace. I was wondering.
Well, Leslie, that's not only a psychological benefit, but a physical benefit. And, you know, and not only that, spiritual, because we begin to release some good endorphins. I'm a fitness instructor, so any time that we're struggling with distress or discomfort, emotionally, psychologically, I think fresh air and walking is good. I'll tell the girls, walk down to the intergroup office and see if there's anybody over there that you need to help, and then walk home and call me when you get home. and let's see how that works. And they'll be like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, no, put your shoes on and go. And, you know, sometimes that's the best we can do, Leslie, put our shoes on and take some action. We're not going to get better by sitting around trying to think our way out of it. It doesn't work that way. We have to take the action, and the action then brings about the change in thinking. Always, 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 not the other way around. And so that, too, becomes part of, as Bill described in his book, a way to meditate, to move out of a mindset, a prolonged feeling of negativity. You know, we have to put our shoes on and get moving. So yeah, I do that. I love being outside and walking. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
Who else would like to ask Judy a question? Anyone on Zoom? Got Jim here.
Hi, Jim Alcoholic. Thanks, Judy. I'm trying to figure out how to ask this. So in readings, it tells me that I'm not supposed to, like, pray for good things for myself. Like, I'm not supposed to pray to hit the lottery, or I'm not supposed to pray to find a $100 bill laying on the ground, or whatever, things like that. But to pray for, you know, pray for others, for them to be as happy and content as myself, and things like that. But then in that 11th step, it says praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. So can you maybe simplify that? Because it's stuff like that I can, you know, I can wrestle with that forever.
Well, yeah, you know, that kind of caught me up in the beginning, too. I thought, you know, there's so many things I need. I mean, I need to be able to pay my rent, for God's sake. I need to be able to get my children to the doctors. I've got to have gas for the car. What do you mean I can't ask God to help me with that? What are you, crazy? What is God for anyway, but, you know, to help me get through this life? You're all nuts. I don't know what you're talking about. But, you know, as I had some better understanding, the whole idea of service to God and to our fellow human beings is the elimination of selfishness. You know, I think that is at our core, our biggest detriment, huh? When we get here, everything about our life prior to coming to AA is pretty much based on self. Would you not agree? So how do we get away from that? So I think step 11 encompasses the solution to that. Many of the other steps do as well, but I think specifically in asking God for help, the idea is to move away from thinking so much about ourselves and what we need, as to thinking what others need and how we might be able to help them. And so I just came around to that realization. Now, when we talk about step 11, it's specific to the 12 steps. But when we talk about prayer, prayer can be within our 12 steps, or it can be separate from the 12 steps. It can just be a major part of our life, and that in a prayerful connection with a power greater than ourselves, it is our request for help from that power. And it can be asking for help for ourselves. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I do.
So we can have prayer and meditation to be of service to God and others, and then we can have prayer and meditation for ourselves specifically. I view them as two separate things. And I view this part as trying to develop a more connected consciousness of a power greater than myself, but not being specifically involved with 12 steps. Like some people go to church. Well, I don't go to church. And so I think they try to develop a better understanding and connection through church. Well, I have found other ways to do that, and specifically with solitude, with a dependence on some answers for myself, you see. But I have to say, when I think about it, when I'm asking for solutions or help for myself, somehow it does turn out always to be a benefit to others. Because if I become a better person, that's going to be beneficial to the people in my life. You follow me? So I guess in reality, it all boils down to the same thing, you know? So I would just... nothing has to be perfect. You've heard me say there's no wrong way to work your steps. And I believe that as long as you're working with your sponsor and your intent of heart is in the right place, and that you want to become a better person and you'd like to be of some benefit to your family, your community, and to God. And if you're doing that, you're on the right road. I don't care how you do it. You know, we don't have to, I don't know. I think we kind of have to fall into a prayer and meditation that feels comfortable and good for us. And whatever that is for you, it is fine by me, and it should be with everyone. Got it?
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Clear as mud.
Well, thank you, Judy. I think that about wraps up our time. We appreciate your